Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports. 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour as I sit here and cry in my coffee over the news this morning that my fantasy football team could be sunk. Breaking news, you just heard the guys in front of us, but Derrick Henry is feared to have a Jones fracture. If that kind of makes you clench up, it's because, yes, that's the same injury that Kevin Durant had all those years ago, and that would effectively end his, for sure, regular season. The playoffs would be a possibility, but that just broke, so the MRI scheduled. They'll read the results, but not good news for my fantasy football team or the Titans with Derrick Henry looking like he's going to be out for a prolonged period of time. So that story broke right as we were coming on the air. Figured we needed to get out there for you guys. Coming up today, Jim Traber. Of course, it's a Monday. We'll talk to Jim at 9:30. Hit some college football topics. Oklahoma played a more complete game, probably their most complete game of the season, with the dismantling of Texas Tech. Oklahoma State absolutely crushed Kansas on Saturday. And maybe the big news out of the Big 12 was what happened yesterday. Gary Patterson, TCU, agreeing to part ways, effective immediately. And so Gary Patterson, after 21 years at the helm of TCU, unprecedented success, 181 wins as the TCU head coach, is done there. You wonder if he's done for good or if he just kind of was looking for something different. So that shakes things up in the Big 12 moving forward with Gary Patterson not at TCU anymore, even though, if we're being honest, I'm not sure he'd been there for the past 5 years. Since that 2017 appearance in the Big 12 title game against the Sooners, TCU has just kind of been a also-ran in this conference, living a little bit more off reputation than maybe the results on the field. But we'll talk about that. Who's next? What are they doing? Why is everybody getting fired in the middle of the season all of a sudden? It's craziness. Also, of course, high school football for Friday night. The playoff pictures have become completely clear in both Class 4A and 4A District 1 and Class A District 1. It's the waters were muddy. They could have continued to be muddy, but with the results that happened on Friday night, it's crystal clear. We can tell you exactly what's going on and what will happen. Maybe not the results of the games Friday night, but what those results will mean. It's simple, and I didn't think it was going to be this simple when we left Friday. It's clear what's going to happen now after what happened on last Friday night. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in. 225-9698. Going to be outside the listening area. Stay in touch with us by logging on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. The app has radio. It's got Penny News. It's got Big Elk and Paragon TV. We'll talk a bunch about that coming up tomorrow, especially with basketball starting for the small schools. Also got the Skinny on Sports podcast. iTunes, KADSAM.com. Hello, Jared.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Enough with the formalities. We got to get to it because Jim's coming up. It's amazing how fast the time goes when he's on, but you know what goes even faster?
What's that?
This first, like, 25 minutes before he gets here.
Really does.
It's like we really kind of get going, and then boom. Whoa.
It's time to call Jim. Well, it's because we got a lot to talk about over the weekend.
We do. Let's start with Football Friday in high school football. Clinton absolutely dominated Elk City. There's no other way to say it. The Red Tornadoes were physically dominant in a 34-0 win over the Elks. When you look at some of the stats coming out of that game, Clinton outgained Elk City 421-74, so six times as many yards. They ran double the amount of plays, double and then some, double and a half at 56-22. The Elks just could not get Caden Powell stopped. And here's going to be the problem, I think, watching Clinton. You knew they had the skill guys. What I was particularly impressed with from the Red Tornadoes that I didn't necessarily see coming, at least to the level that they did, was the domination on the offensive and defensive lines that they put on the Elks. I thought that would be more of kind of a little bit closer to a stalemate, and it wasn't. Clinton kicked the Elks' tail up and down the field at the point of attack. And here's the thing. Everyone's so scared to death about with Seabolt and Jones back there at the tailback spot running the sweep, you know, 65, 75, 85-yard touchdowns and all that. The Elks did a fantastic job against those guys. 17 carries, 93 yards. You can't hardly ask for much more than that against those two. But the problem's going to be anybody trying to stop that Clinton offense. If you kind of pay attention to the edges so much, that up the middle and that giant monster of a quarterback, Caden Powell, that Clinton has, really tough to stop all the things that Clinton can do.
Yeah, it's the X's and O's of it. You can stop one, but it opens up other things. I think that's a little bit what we saw Friday night, meaning the gaps are so – I mean, he creates that too with this size, like you mentioned, Powell. But, yeah, the Elks did a good job on two of the three-headed monster, but you still have the other head you have to deal with. And that's and listen, a lot of teams have been dealing with that. They've dealt with that with Clinton all season long. Was if one guy wasn't going to beat you, then – two others were, in this case, one other guy was, and it is what it is. I mean, yeah, came out on the other end of it, but a lot of teams have against Clinton. That's a good team that Elk City went up against. They got to quickly put it behind them. Let's end the season on a good note on senior night with Newcastle, and then look forward to playoffs, which we're about to talk about because you said it's become a little bit more clear, and you know, that's we knew that going into Friday night, the playoffs are there. I mean, it is now going to happen for Elk City, and the season's not lost based off of one result. That's something that these guys cannot harp on. They can't have that. You can't let a loss beat you more than once. So just move on. I mean, Clinton is Clinton. We knew that going in, and it was going to take a really good effort to take those guys down. But I think another big part of it was injuries, especially Drake Hughes. When you want to defend Clinton, you need speed. And obviously Drake is that guy who can be speedy. Now, would he have been the whole difference? I don't know. But,
no.
I mean, but it just seemed deflating when he went down and it became clear he was not able to come back when he came out of the locker room without his pads on. And it might have been a situation of like, listen, let's not get anybody else hurt. Let's just move on.
Yeah, there's no way I'm sitting here to make that excuse. I mean, that – Clinton physically dominated
on
the
lines. What I'm saying is sometimes that the trickle-down effect, everyone sees, well, 14's out.
He didn't play defensive tackle. He didn't play, you know what I'm saying? If we want to say an injury that made a bigger difference to me, it would have been Sammy at the linebacker spot. But, listen, the Elks weren't on quarterback sneaks. They weren't making contact with Powell until it was 5 yards down the field. That's not anything but Clinton's offensive line dominating that game. And that's what happened. At the end of the day, you know, even when the Elks, you know, Clinton tried to shoot themselves in the foot a couple of times with penalties and getting way behind the chains, and then they would run a quarterback draw on 3rd and 27 and get 50. I mean, that's stuff that just can't – that can't happen if you're going to stay in the game against a team as good as Clinton. And I'll be honest with you, Clinton's better than I thought they were because they're the guys on the lines – are better than I thought they were. That plain and simple. That's a state title looking team, no doubt about
and
it.
And even talk after the game when we're leaving, talking to Dennis and Alan, their broadcast crew. They said it too. Said that's the best those guys ever played. You know, and that's part of it too.
Well,
it's the best. That was the best game, best complete game that Clinton's ever played this season. So that's part of it too. I mean, just unfortunate it was against us. Doesn't mean we're a bad team. I mean, they just played a really, really good game.
This has everything to do with Clinton and not much to do with Elk City because Clinton is fantastic, and they're in the top four for a reason. And when you really – if you just stop and think about it, it's easy to kind of get caught up in what was going on into it. But, you know, you're talking about – you know, it's even underappreciated outside of that town – what exactly they are. I mean, you're talking about one of the top three to five, damn sure five, maybe top three programs in the state of Oklahoma in high school football of all time. You know, it's 23 out of 24 against the Elks. Elk City still hasn't won over there since 1998. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, what is the surprise?
Yeah,
you know, maybe the margin and the way that it looked is surprising. But nobody should be surprised that Clinton beat Elk City on the football field. And it happens all the time. literally almost every year.
I think the way it happened was surprising. The stats to it, when you go back and look
just
at the stats.
And domination.
You know, you hate to see the zero. You know, you'd like, you'd think that maybe there would have been a score here or there, but that was a surprise for me. But was it a surprise that Clinton won? Let's be honest. No,
absolutely not. And so now, like you said.
And no one's going to be surprised if they're playing, what is it, December 4th on a Saturday afternoon
for
a title.
Heck no.
And after what I saw last night, I know I had questions about them as being state title contenders.
Man, they're very good.
Man, they're very good.
They're very good. As far as the playoff picture, it's simple in 4A1. Bethany comes to the Tornado Bowl on Friday night. That game is for the district title. Newcastle comes to Big Elk Stadium on Friday night. That game is for third and fourth. That it's that simple. The rest of the four are out. Those four are in. All that matters now is what order are they going to be in. Clinton, Bethany, Newcastle, Elk City are the four teams in the playoffs. How Clinton and Bethany are 1 and 2. Newcastle and Elk City are 3 and 4. In whatever order, depending on what happens Friday night. But, yeah, I mean, that just kudos to the Red Tornadoes. That was a beatdown. And it's going to take a good team to beat them. They're better than I thought for sure. It just the problems they create, you're going to have to figure out a way defensively to not have to put so many resources stopping the outside stuff, but still be able to hold up in the middle. Good luck.
Yeah.
Because even if you know, you get away from getting blocked, you still got to bring him down.
He's a load.
Yes. That, they're going to be hard to stop. And defensively, we knew they were good on defense. We knew. You know, that part, you know, the maybe zero is surprising and 74 yards is surprising. But the fact that Clinton was able to kind of handle Elk City's offense, that's not that surprising. I mean, we talked about it on Friday. The Elks needed it to be in the teens to win, because it's just going to be hard to score.
Right.
And that was certainly the case. So now down in District A1, the Merritt Oilers fall to Fairview 44-20. Hooker defeated Moreland 34-8. Burns Flat hammered Thomas 44-14. And then maybe the most shocking score in the state of Oklahoma. The Sayre Eagles got off the schneid in district with a 26-19 win over the Texoma Red Devils. I was getting reports through our game. Then I talked to some people on Friday or on Saturday afternoon how that all went down. Texoma had a kid just drop the game tying touchdown pass in the end zone after being down 26-12 on the last play of the game. But Sayre does knock off Texoma. So here's what happens there. Texoma, Thomas, Sayre are out. And you know what? I said this 2 or 3 weeks ago when it started to kind of, you know, you could see those teams building in the middle. And it was one of two things was going to eliminate somebody or get them like a leg up. The first one never happened. None of the middle teams ever beat Fairview, Hooker, or Moreland. That didn't happen. But the other thing was you have to beat Sayre. Texoma didn't, and now Texoma's out. They cannot make the playoffs. So it comes down to Fairview and Hooker playing a district title game on Friday night at 9-0, 6-0 in the district. Moreland's third no matter what happens. And then right here at Merritt, Burns Flat comes over to Merritt, and whoever wins that game is fourth.
We might be a little distracted Friday night.
Man, it's amazing.
We got two really good games happening at the same time.
That
means something.
The Sayre win totally messed, because I was going to have to start looking in rule book and trying to figure out, making sure I was right with all the, you know, what the tiebreakers were and all that stuff. And then Sayre beat Texoma, and that's over. It's Merritt and Burns Flat are the deal. One's fourth, one's fifth, depending on who wins. Because right now, Burns Flat has a game lead at 3-3, Merritt's 2-4. But obviously, if the Oilers win, they tie at 3-4. Just a two-way tie. Merritt gets the head-to-head victory. There they go. On to the playoffs. So what was a seemingly muddy picture is crystal clear going into this Friday night. In two big games, really three big games around the area in 4A1. Two of them in 4A1, one of them in A1. With Merritt hosting Burns Flat for a playoff spot, you've got the Elks and Newcastle for third and fourth, which, you know, that might not seem it's a bigger deal than you think, because avoiding fourth means you avoid number one Tuttle. That doesn't mean you've got an easy chore to go to Cushing and win, but Cushing's only loss was to Tuttle. So, you know, that's somewhere you really don't want to go. And then, of course, Bethany and Clinton over there for the district title. Question, how big is Caden Powell? What is he, 6'4", 220?
Yeah.
Ish?
Here's the deal. He's a linebacker playing quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. Like 6'4", 220. He's going to OU to play baseball. I mean, the kid is an athlete. And
that's how he's listed. I think that's how he should be listed, athlete.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm – am I or am I not? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to – you don't, and I don't know. I don't know if college has been poking his interest at football at the next level, but he's been committed to baseball since his freshman year of high school, from what I'm told. So that's
I think he committed to OU as a freshman in high school.
Yeah, verbally
to go play baseball.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of anxious to see how he is on the diamond. I haven't had a chance to see him play.
All right, real quick, we got to talk about what happened at Grove.
That made my head spin when I heard that whole. So Grove intentionally lost a game.
That is exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. So going into that game in District 4A, 3.
Is it 3?
Yeah, District 3 and 4A. So Wagner and Bristow both had a loss. Grove was undefeated. Grove had the lead in the district points over Wagner by like 7.
Going into
It was 9 because they're 5 ahead right now. So they were 9 ahead. So the game is tied at 20 with like 5 seconds left in the game. The only way for Grove, they play Miami this week, so they've got to get the 15 points there, but Miami is also 3-6, 1-5 in the district. So instead of going to overtime and risking losing that game by 6, which would have given Wagner the district point lead and thus the district title, Grove, in a tie game, last play of the game on their own like 30, quarterback takes the snap, runs into their own end zone, and takes a safety. Grove loses to Wagner 22-20, but that loss creates a 3-team tie with everybody beating everybody, and with Grove ahead in the district point race, essentially clinches them the district title. Is that smart? Is it wimpy? Where do you stand on that decision to literally lose a game on purpose but benefit yourself down the road?
I get it. I mean, it's a two-part answer. It's smart. It's smart in the bigger – in the grand scheme of things, right, if it works.
Now, here's something I found out, and I need to check and see if this is true. Because after – you know, we're thinking, oh, yes, you know, if you lose by 6, then you lose 12 points. And on the points, then what I heard isn't true because I heard it's a 1-point deal no matter what. But that's not the case on the standings on OSSAA because it was 66-57 going into last week when we looked at it on the way home. And now it's 64-59. So it was 2 points both ways. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard that it was just a 1-point thing. Okay. But I think it's brilliant because here's the deal. What is the goal? The goal isn't to beat Wagner. The goal is to win the state title. And the best chance you have to win the state title is to win the district and have 2 home games, right?
Well, right.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely brilliant.
There are going to be some who are going to say you should go out to win every game, no matter what. You go for the win, no matter what. None of this conceding stuff for the bigger picture, for the good of the program. Whatever.
I think it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And what would be even better, depending on the results, if it knocked Wagner on the other side of the bracket.
Like if they get third?
Just whichever way it turns out. Man, you know what? I was looking at the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em standings.
Yeah.
And I see you tied with me.
Oh, really?
Yes. And we're behind Tyler.
How far behind?
One game. He must have had a push in there somewhere. Well, we would all have a push. Or maybe he didn't make a pick. Anyway, 41-48 for him. We're 41-49, 8 games below 500.
Now I've come roaring back.
Possum's third. This deal's rigged. Western Oklahoma Realty.
Rigged.
Western Oklahoma Realty College pick 'em. Thank you to Tyler Harris and Robbie Allen and the Game, People Before Property, is their motto for all your real estate needs. Go visit them at Western Oklahoma Realty. Looking at the game, I don't think they've got them up yet for next week.
No, usually not till
kind
tomorrow.
Of tomorrow when those will come up. But
let's see here.
Anyhow. Also, before we get into the, well, we're not going to have much time getting into college football before Jim comes on. Congrats go out to some youngsters.
Okay.
Third and fourth grade football, dominated, undefeated season, capped off by winning the end of season tournament at Canadian this weekend.
Awesome.
And then also the Merritt fifth and sixth. Also dominated in their division and went out and won.
Great.
I think I'd seen Billy put for the Merritt guys, 346-20 was their total score for the year.
I'll say that again.
346-20
That would be the season. That would be dominating.
Yeah. I bet you I can find the total for Sayre, too, here in just a second. But both teams undefeated. Both teams were the champs out there in the tournament. Real quick on Gary Patterson before we get Jim on.
Yeah.
From a 1 to 10, how surprised were you at that news that started filtering out yesterday afternoon?
About 5 after thinking about it. I've gone on record how I feel about midseason firings, but when it – I don't know. Some programs like Tech and TCU, I think, kind of – overvalue themselves to a point. But did Gary Patterson, was it time for him to be put out the pasture? Maybe. But the guy that's given you 21?
Yeah, 21 seasons. Well, after 20 years. Yeah, this is 21st.
To your program, to your school, and to cut him loose like that on Halloween of all times of the year. Again, not a good look, but again, it's Texas football and TCU at this time, and I'm about a 5. I'm about a 5 is how surprised I am.
Well, to that point, I mean, it sounds like they wanted him to stay all year, and he said no. He was ready to get done with it.
He didn't want to do a swan song.
Kind of so, yeah. Because this is news that you're not going to be able to keep under wraps, right? I mean, it's going to filter out. Even if you make the decision this weekend, hey, we're going to part ways at the end of the year, you know that's getting out before the season's over. Someone's saying that.
If it was behind closed doors, listen, we're going to cut Gary loose at the end of the year. Someone came out and said, hey, Gary.
Yeah, but I'm saying even if they met and decided we're going to do this, it's getting out.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
And so I think to your point, Gary Patterson knew it would, didn't want to just have a little 4-game, you know, nod and tip his hat to the crowd type thing. And so from what I've read, he is the one that said, no, let's do it now, and we'll move on. I think it's going to be super interesting to see what happens there, because Tech, TCU, both open at the same time. Did TCU kind of counter Tech's move with Sonny Dykes in mind? Is it Jeff Traylor down at UTSA?
Is there arms race we don't know about?
Exactly, for one of those two guys where, you know, Gary's had enough. I mean, listen, TCU has been terrible this year, 3-5, 1-4 in the Big 12. They haven't really been a contender in the Big 12 title race since that 2017 season when they played Oklahoma the first year the game came back. You know, and it's just – I think he's been living a little bit more on his reputation than what the results were. And here's the truth of it. Outside of a 2014 and 2017, the move to the Big 12 financially has been a good thing, I'm sure, for the university. But for Gary Patterson and winning, it hasn't. They never really gained the foothold that it looked like he might when they came into this league. You know, they're coming off undefeated, beating Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl and all that kind of stuff before they got here, and then once they became a member of the Big 12, a couple of highs, but for the most part, pretty average in the Big 12. So Patterson's is going to be stepping aside now. Jerry Kill is going to take over. That scares me to death. If you know his history, hope something bad doesn't happen there in the last 4 games. You know who that is, right?
Sounds very familiar. Wasn't he at Minnesota?
Yeah, and having seizures on the sideline.
Oh, right.
That's him.
Yes.
So maybe that means that's rectified, or You hope it doesn't, with more stress and more pressure as being the head coach, you know, you hate to see what might happen. But, you know, there was the incident this weekend at Kansas State with the scuffle and all that. It honestly had felt, and this, it's never been the case there, but hasn't it felt like Gary Patterson's kind of lost his team down there this year? I mean, it just hasn't been what it's been. And so he's stepping aside. Be interesting, though.
Like, you know, I agree it was time for a change, but I think it was mishandled.
Well, I mean, if he says, I'm done, what are you going to do?
I know.
You can't make him go coach.
But just for them to even have the conversation in the middle of the season is how I'm talking about why it's mishandled. You can't wait until the very final snap, until it's 0-0-0, then you can have that conversation of moving on. You can't wait. You just have to hurry and have to – and I think it is because there's a little bit of an arms race.
I think it is, too.
Who can quicker put the money together and put an offer together for whoever that coach may be, and I don't know who it is. Is it Dykes?
I think it's either Dykes or Traylor.
Yeah. There's someone else we're not thinking about, but I think it can wait. All that can wait to the end of the season.
Yeah, it's
no winners. No winners.
Well, that's over. I'm telling you right now, that deal's over. This is the new norm, is what I'm saying.
Hate it.
In the arms race of coaching in college football.
No respect anymore.
Joining us now is the voice you're going to hear at 2 o'clock right on these airwaves. It is the ultimate Jim Traber. Jim, how are you this morning?
I am good, fellas. How's everything in western Oklahoma?
It's not as windy as it was in the middle of the week. Everything's kind of settled down. A little cool, but it's supposed to be rainy, cold, and then get nice again by the time the weekend and next week rolls around. So it'll be all right.
Although it's getting ready to get cold the next few days.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I'm sure you won't mind starting in the NFL. I just told Jared off air. Yesterday, we got to see for 3 hours and 10 minutes or whatever, however long that game lasted, literally the epitome of why one team is the Steelers and why one team is the Browns. Everything going against Pittsburgh in that game on the road, tough environment, and they somehow find a way to win the game. And the Browns find a way to lose it. That, to me, that's just the epitome of those two franchises playing out right there in one football game on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't forget now last year the Browns beat them back-to-back games. But that was incredible to lose your kicker and know that you had no chance to kick a field goal. And, you know, they just had to totally handle the situation differently. And, you know, the Steelers are running the ball now. I mean, that's what everybody in Pittsburgh was hoping that they would do, was learn how to run the ball, and that's what they're doing. So, look, I still think they're not – I don't know. I mean, the offense is very average at best. But that defense gives you a chance to win. And, you know, there's a lot of talk. I'm listening to morning shows talking today about – you know, Jarvis Landry dropping balls, and then he fumbled and everything like that. Well, a couple things. First of all, they were hitting Jarvis Landry like crazy. So that one in the middle, I thought Baker threw the ball too high. The other couple passes, Landry should catch the ball. But the fact of the matter is, like it or not, this is the truth, whether you want to blame it on him or not, every time this team has a chance to win a game in the fourth quarter, they don't. So you can say it's Baker Mayfield's fault. You can say he has nothing to do with it. What's he got, fellas? Six. What are they now? They are 3-3. No, what are they? They're 3-4, right?
I think they're 4-4.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Four and four. Yeah, okay. 4-4. And in 8 games, how many touchdowns has Baker Mayfield thrown for? He played only 7. He has 6 touchdown passes,
yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, those are numbers like in middle school, in high school, okay? So he is not a big-time quarterback. And as I said, as a Steelers fan, I hope they give him $40 million because 3 years from now, this organization will be done. I'm just telling you, if they do that, they'll be done because they're not going to be able to keep all these other guys. They're going to lose Clowney. They're going to lose Hunt. Now, I think they got a little bit lucky maybe with this Dearness Johnson kid. They may not need Hunt. But they're going to lose people. And the Steelers somehow figure out a way to go in there and win. It's just crazy. Ben Roethlisberger didn't turn the ball over. The defense was great. And somehow they're ahead of the Browns. But I'll just tell people out there, for all you people that have become Browns fans, all I heard all season was they have the best roster in football. The best roster in football. They're the Browns, okay? I don't care how good they are. They always figure out ways not to do things that should be done. And we'll see. We'll see what happens the rest of the year. I do give it up to Baker, though. He's a tough dude, plays with injuries. I like that because I was one of those dudes. I played through injuries. You just have to get out there and get it if you can. And but just not enough to beat the Steelers. Not enough.
What do you make of the AFC? You know, you look around. The Jets have two wins, and they came against the you know, Cincinnati, and they also beat the Titans. You know, the Titans got some bad news today, obviously, with Derrick Henry's foot. It feels like there's good teams, but is there a great one? And who do you think – who would you favor right now as the favorite in the AFC?
Well, first of all, if Henry's out for the season like they're saying, they're done. D-U-N, done.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, Tannehill's done some good things, don't get me wrong, but they're all based on Henry. And that was a nice win for them. Yesterday, I liked the Colts in that game a lot. If it wasn't for Wentz, they'd probably win the game. Because, my goodness, what the heck was he doing? Some of the things that he did in that game. But anyway, I still think Buffalo's the best team in the AFC. I really do. You're going to lose some games, and you're going to lose some crazy games. That's just the way the NFL is, guys. You're going to lose to people you shouldn't lose to, and you're going to beat some people that you shouldn't beat. But, I just think that Buffalo is probably the best team. I was really surprised with New England going to beat the Chargers. That was what Belichick does against young quarterbacks is pretty impressive. He really does. He gives them hard times, and he did it again. So that was a really, really good win for New England. Really good win.
It was the day of the backup quarterback yesterday, it felt like. What was more impressive, New Orleans with Simeon beating Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, or Dallas with the late-game scratch of Dak beating Minnesota? It looked like they were just going to concede that game, but their defense had a different opinion about that. What was more impressive to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because of my five picks, those two were both picks. I had the Saints and I had the Vikings. So obviously, to me, the biggest one is the Cowboys. That was a tremendous win. I mean, that's a game, fellas, that over the last 15 years that your Cowboys would have lost by 10 or 14 points.
Yep.
I mean, it's just the way they are. They look like they've got a different mindset. I think one of the reasons why is because I think Mike Nolan is one of the worst defensive coaches I've ever seen in my life. You know, I think that coming in there has done a great job of just toughening this team up. Yeah, they're better personnel-wise. I'm not saying they aren't, but they're not great. This isn't some great defense, but they got a different mentality, and that toughness was like, okay, we've lost our quarterback; he's not going to play, but we can go out here and win. We can still go out and win, and they did. So, and the Vikings should be embarrassed that they lost the game. Frankly, Cousins is one of those dudes that just looks good and can make plays, but never, ever really gets it done. And the Cowboys did what they had to do, so very impressive. Very impressive win for your Cowboys, fellas. You guys are definitely in the mix. I don't think they're going to win it, but they're definitely in the mix. And then as far as New Orleans is concerned, he can't beat. I just saw a stat here a minute ago. Since he's been down there, since Tom Brady's been at Tampa, his record is absurd, obviously. They're great. But he's 1-3 against the Saints. That's the one team that gives him a terrible time. So they better hope they don't play the Saints in the playoffs, because the Saints are pretty daggone good. They really are. So it's going to be interesting, the races. And I still like my Rams pick. I still think the Rams have got a chance.
Yeah, on Brady, I saw that this morning. That he's turned the ball over three times and was sacked three times Sunday. He's had three games where those two numbers combined for 5+ since he's been at Tampa, and all three of them have come against the Saints. And that's that's a big part of why his record is that way down there. The NFC is, man, it feels to me at least like, you know, maybe the best three or four teams in the entire league outside of maybe Buffalo, because I'm with you. I think Buffalo is going to end up being the class of the AFC. But it feels like, you know, they're one of the top five, and then the rest all are coming from the NFC. How would you kind of slot those right now as we just kind of reach the halfway point of the season?
Oh, I mean, I think that, frankly, it's hard to slot them. I still think the best three teams are the Rams, the Cardinals, and the Tampa Bay. And then what Green Bay did, I mean, they went on the road with a bunch of big injuries, and they won too, so you got to put them in there. So any one of those four teams could win it. I'm going to stay with the Rams. I mean, I think that they're still kind of getting acclimated with Stafford. You know, they only got one loss. I mean, you know, it's not like everybody's been losing. They're winning. So what you got? You got Arizona with one loss, Green Bay with one loss, and the Rams with one loss.
And our Cowboys.
And the Cowboys. I forgot about your Cowboys. Sometimes I just forget about them. I apologize.
We're just not
and
used then, of course, to it. I get it.
That's right. And Tampa's got two losses. And look, you look at the Cowboys, fellas. They got a chance to go about 15-2. They really do. I mean, the rest of their schedule is not that hard. And they're one of the games that looked really hard. They go to the Chiefs. I don't know what the Chiefs are going to be like by then. Chiefs defense is horrible. I think I would guess that the Chiefs will get a little bit right tonight against the Giants. And then everybody will say they're back to normal, but that won't mean they're back because the Giants stink. So yeah, your Cowboys are going to have a great record. They could be the number one seed because their schedule is just so bad. Teams in that division are terrible.
I got a feeling we're going to have some Cowboy watch parties at the Sayre Golf and Country Club. You are more than welcome to join us when you know we're watching the Super Bowl.
Oh,
you know where Sarah's at.
Here we go.
Yeah, you can. Hey, listen, we got an extra bed. You watch it on Sunday. We can get up on Monday. Come hang out. It'll be fine.
By the way, speaking of that, I'm going to be in Sarre this Thursday at Rob's Ranch. So I'll be coming out there to the western part of the state. So. Is it still going to be cold, too?
Yeah, cold and rainy, I think. For sure, Tuesday and Wednesday. Maybe the rain moves out, but cold's still going to be set in on Thursday. Let's go to the college game. How surprised were you with the news yesterday afternoon that TCU and Gary Patterson have mutually decided to split ways right now? And so now you look up TCU, Texas Tech, both open in the Big 12, along with the other monster jobs around the country. It seemed like this maybe had been coming because TCU – hasn't been. You've been blowing this horn more than anybody on the station for years that, you know, Gary Patterson's defenses aren't what they were. Were you surprised, shocked, or, you know, kind of maybe see this coming?
Well, you know, I don't know if you guys were listening, but I asked Tram last week, I think it was on Friday, if Gary Patterson was fireable. And he goes, absolutely not. They got a statue out front. Well, it sounds as if this was a mutual thing and they wanted him to stay on for the rest of the year, and he said, no thanks. I kind of feel the same way. I mean, I know people say he's letting his players down. Really? I mean, they're letting you know that you're going to be gone. Why would you want to coach a couple games? That doesn't do anything for me. But I don't know, man. This is interesting now because I think that one of the reasons why they did this is because I think they may want Sonny Dykes too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both of those teams might be fighting for Sonny Dykes. And if you're Sonny Dykes, which one do you take? Do you take the one that is the better job, which I think is probably TCU, or do you take the one where your father was a legend? I don't know. It's a great question. I think you got a better chance to win at TCU. That's just me. But everybody tells me Texas Tech is a pretty good job, so we will see. But, yeah, I'm not that surprised, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'm a little surprised because of what he's done in his career, but I'm not that surprised that they wanted to move on. Because he's a defensive coach and their defense stinks. You know, I mean, look, he's probably the best coach in the history of the school, but I take pride. Every once in a while, it's time to move on.
How about your result or reaction to OU? They look like they finally played a complete game. Has it been fixed, or is it just they just got fired up hearing all the talk? What's your reaction from that?
Well, I'm not going to say that I think it's fixed, but they did play a complete game. Texas Tech, you know, it hurt them a little bit that they lost Columbia, but that's not the reasoning. I thought that the defense flew to the ball. I thought it was a really interesting move to move Key Lawrence out there to a corner. because he was very physical, you know. Now, when they get, they're going to get ready to play some better teams, so it'll be interesting to, if he can get out there against those better teams and continue to do that. The good thing is that there's no offenses like there used to be, you know. I think that Iowa State's offense is good. I think that Baylor's is decent, and I think that OSU's is at best pedestrian. So the defense still got a chance in these last three games to do some things. I'm interested to see the offense, especially against Oklahoma State. Yeah, good win. I mean, they really played well on both sides of the ball. They've got a quarterback that is absurdly special. He just keeps doing things, and you think, wow, I mean, how old is this kid? But it's impressive. I will say this. I'll be interested to see if he and others on OU can make the people miss on Iowa State and OSU's defense, you know, because he's had those two touchdown runs that have been huge on fourth down, and, you know, there was two guys in both times that could tackle him, and he made both of them miss. If he makes people like with OSU's defense miss, well, then it's going to be even more unbelievable what he's doing. But, good win. And then, of course, the OSU game, all you could do the whole game is just sit there and think, how the heck did OU let this team play with them? I mean, Kansas is so embarrassingly bad. That quarterback, OU made him look like, you know, you're thinking, wow, this guy's got a chance. Oh, with all due respect, no, he doesn't. And that team is terrible. And OSU did what they had to do, and now they get ready for a nice little stretch run. And after Iowa State loses, fellas, it's really interesting because now if OU and OSU win out, we will definitely have back-to-back Bedlam games, which will just be disgusting for the league, but I guess it'll be great for us, two Bedlam games back-to-back.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Watching that game on Saturday night, it was like, how in the world was it 10-0 at halftime? Just a week ago, Kansas didn't even get a first down until like middle of the third quarter against Oklahoma State.
It looked like a game
State.
We were watching Friday night.
Yeah, it really did.
Honestly.
Around the country, man, Michigan State came back from the dead against Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, what now, 4-13 against top 10 teams, unable. You know, it's one thing to lose to Ohio State. It's a whole nother, and they were playing that little brother thing up pretty good around the country with Michigan State beating Michigan. Mel Tucker 2-0 against Michigan, first Michigan State coach ever like that. You know, that was a great game, and Kenneth Walker III, he's got to be shooting up that Heisman watch list.
Yeah, he is a tremendous running back, man. He really is. He has an explosion to him that's just crazy. Like, it looks like he's, like, bottled up, and then suddenly he'll run around the end. And normally when running backs do that, people have angles on him. He doesn't get anywhere, but he runs past everybody. He's really impressive. Yeah, I mean, look, Jim Harbaugh, I actually said it on the pregame yesterday. I thought that Michigan looks different. This McNamara kid, he's a good quarterback. And I really thought Michigan looked different than they've looked in the past. But you know what? It's the same old Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, big game, big lead. They're up 16 points. Not only did they give up two touchdowns, but they give up two-point conversions to let them tie the game. So, I don't know, man. Michigan, you know what? Michigan's going to end up probably 10-2. They're going to lose to Ohio State. It'll be a nice year for them again. Everybody will say, oh, they're on their – no, they're going to be – that's what they are. That's basically what they are. But I'll tell you, Mel Tucker has shown everybody in the country – that there is a way to go from bad to good. And that is go out and get as many players as you can. If you can bring in 20 dudes, maybe only 10 of them play. But you get to choose who those 10 are out of the 20. And it's a brilliant move. This daggone Walker kid, he was a Wake Forest.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, Wake Forest is undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
So very impressive game for them. Really, really impressive game for them. And, you know, I think Michigan State, we'll see what they can do against Ohio State. Ohio State struggled a little bit this week, but I think that might have been one of those little down spots. So going to be very, very interesting to see. And I'll tell you what, the winner of the Big Ten is getting in. I mean, you know that. There's no – I mean, it would have to be crazy. Everybody had to lose two games. But a one-loss team in the Big Ten will get in ahead of – a no-loss Cincinnati team. or a one-loss team in the Big 12. What about Wake Forest if they go undefeated and win the league? How people are going to treat them?
Yeah, I heard you talking about that this week with a bunch of those scenarios. That's going to be a wild case because there is after what's happened, there's a really, really good chance with Pittsburgh losing that Wake Forest is not going to play anybody ranked all year long. But yeah. They are undefeated in a Power 5 conference.
Can't ignore that.
I mean, let me ask you. I don't know if I ever heard you ask this one just head-to-head. Let's say that, you know, Oklahoma's undefeated, one loss Big 10, and then Georgia beats Bama, so Bama has two losses. You've got these three teams in consideration. Undefeated conference champ Cincinnati, undefeated conference champ Wake Forest, two-loss Alabama. How does it go?
Does Oregon only have one loss?
Oregon has two. Let's go Oregon okay. Two. But that way it just kind of eliminates some of that.
Well, we all know that if Alabama lined up against both of those, either one of those teams would be a double-digit favorite and probably beat both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you, man, if it's me, I'm putting Wake Forest in. I'm sorry. And I know some will say, well, Cincinnati's played a better schedule. I mean, I guess you could say that. But Wake Forest, if you win a – can you understand what's going to happen to the ACC? The ACC would go ballistic if they have an undefeated winner not get in over a group of five undefeated winner. That would be – you talk about a precedent now. Just because Clemson's not good, everybody's going to just change their mind on the entire league. So, and by the way, they play North Carolina, then they play North Carolina State. I think North Carolina State's good. So, you know, I think they play Boston College and Georgia Tech.
Now they still got they go to North Carolina, host North Carolina State, and then finish at Clemson at BC.
Oh yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. And then Georgia Tech. Like, then, do they play Georgia Tech?
Nope.
Yeah. They don't play Georgia Tech? Uh-uh. Well, that's right. That's Georgia. What am I talking about? I don't know what's wrong with me. I got all these things mixed up. No, you're right. That is Wake Forest schedule, and that it looks tough on paper, and some people say it is, some people say it won't be, but they'll probably end up losing the game. I mean, can't believe that they would go into Clemson and beat them, but you never know. But, yeah, it's going to all be interesting. I think OU, if they lose a game, I think they could be in some trouble, guys. I really do. If they lose one of these games coming up, I don't know how people are going to take them. Every single game all year, they barely won. I think there'll be some people that hold the Kansas game against them. And I know that's not right, but that's the way some people look at it. So we will see. Alabama, though, I think they got a chance to beat. If they beat Georgia, then those two teams are going to be in.
Yeah,
and then everybody's going to be upset.
Okay, so coming up tomorrow is the first poll. I want you to – what do you think the top four will be, and how would you rank the top four right now?
My rankings would be Georgia, Michigan State, Oklahoma, Alabama. That would be my top four. I think that they're going to go Georgia, Cincinnati – because remember, nobody cares who's in the first poll.
Right.
Last four times OU's been in this thing, they were 5, 9, 5, and 15 in the first poll. So I think that they'll probably go Georgia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and then probably maybe Michigan State 4. I don't know. And then Alabama 5, maybe. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I think Michigan State. I think you got to fire Michigan State way up there. If I'm voting, I mean, I'd have them number two.
I got to ask you as an ex. This is my final question. As a former athlete, and you know, mentally, that's a big part of sports. In any sport, is your mental makeup. Is something wrong mentally with them when they go into the fourth quarter with the lead? Do they apply too much pressure on themselves to go, okay, we got to buck this trend, we got to win this fourth quarter, and they can't do it? It's third game in a row they've lost the fourth quarter and lost a game.
Yeah, by the way, too, I think I heard 75 from the middle of the third quarter on in the last three games. I think they've been beaten 75-3. I think that's what I heard.
Good.
Here's the deal, Jared. When you are physically drained, you are mentally drained too. I'm just telling you, it is harder. You guys know, is it not harder for you if you don't get any sleep at night, okay, if you're tired, to be both physically and mentally on? It is. It's a lot harder. So I think that this team, I don't think they're well conditioned. I really don't. And if I'm the coach, if I'm Sarkisian down there, I think when the season's over, I'm getting rid of my I'm getting rid of my conditioning people. I really am. I mean, unless it's my brother or something, and then I'm calling them all in and saying we got to figure some things out, you know, because they don't look well conditioned in the fourth quarter, which in turn, it's a lot easier to be mentally strong when you're in good shape, and they're not. It just looks to me like they're not physically or mentally in good shape. So, yeah, I mean, they just keep on losing. And it's ended up – I heard yesterday, guys, it's 12 of the last 13 years they've lost at least 4 games. All right? Think about that. 12 of the last 13 years they've lost at least 4 games, and the only year they didn't do it was last year. And they lost 3, and their coach got fired. Check on that, Skinny, to make sure that's right.
Okay.
12 of 13 years, they've lost 4 games. Is that incredible? The University of Texas. So
yeah, they're not back.
No, they're definitely not back. And I don't know what they're going to do because it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. They look good for periods of time. I mean, my gosh, man, the way they looked in that first half against OU, that was incredible. And then they just gave it up. Just gave it up.
Last question. World Series, Houston. Man, last night was just awesome, the way that game started. And I know it's easy to, with the trash can banging, and I was a guy that I know is a Houston fan. We were talking about last night. I'm like, that's what frustrates me about it, is those guys are good, and they were winners. And then they did what they did. It reminded me of like Barry Bonds starting to juice. They didn't have to do it, yet they did. And so it tarnishes everything that they've done. But to fall behind 4-0 after the grand slam from Duval and just plod their way back, and it was the dudes that you would expect to do it with, you know, Correa and Bregman getting off the schneid. Really impressive comeback, I thought, last night for the Astros to get themselves back home with a chance to win 2 in a row and win their second World Series in 5 years.
I mean, they're a really good team. I think they're disgusting, but I think they're a really good team. And if it wasn't for Dusty Baker, I mean, I'd like to see him get beat 50-0. Mm-hmm. But it was a tremendous comeback win. And you know, guys, I'm telling you, I've told the story. And if you guys want to, anybody wants to hear the Diamondback podcast,
yes,
my podcast, Julian Jim Traver, the second one comes out today, and I tell the story on that podcast. And it would be much deeper on the podcast, but I was on the plane flying from all the way from New York back to Arizona in the exact same situation that Houston was yesterday flying back. You know, down 3-2 with 2 games at home, and the Diamondbacks went back and won, you know, both games. So it's possible to do it. I'd like to see the Braves win, but Houston can definitely get there. There's no doubt about that. They got a good team and a tremendous manager, I might add.
Yeah, 2009 and 2020 were the last times that Texas didn't have 4 losses. So really, okay, 09. So for a real season, 2009 was the last time it didn't happen.
Okay, so that means it's 11 of the last 12 years?
Yeah, this would be 11. This is 11 of 12.
So 11 of 12 years. That is just beyond belief. How can a program like that do that? 4 losses. Wait till I bring up that to Al today. He's gonna be gone. Oh, but they're back.
All right. Yeah. Your podcast comes out today. You and Julie, me and my wife listened to it going down to Mountain View the other day. Both number 3 and number 4, the first. I can't wait to hear the rest of the Diamondback stuff. It was fascinating.
So is your wife liking it?
She's the one that said, okay, put it on. Let's listen to it while we drive.
Yeah, we're finding that the women love it. I've had like people come up to me and go, my wife will never listen to your sports station, but she sure loves listening to the podcast. Yeah, for people, guys, listen, we're not like counselors. We're not perfect. We've made many, many mistakes. But we've been married for over 25 years, and we have five children between us that were put together. And we got an amazing story. We really do. And there's a lot of things that we share and talk about, stories that you've never heard on the radio. But number four, the last one we did, was the first part of me getting the Arizona Diamondback job. And then the one that comes out today is the second part, and it talks all about the World Series and all the way through the World Series and 9/11. I mean, we got a lot of great things on this podcast. So if anybody wants to go, it's called Julie and Jim Traber Podcast, and you can get it anywhere. You can get it on Spotify. You can get it on Apple iTunes. You can get it on Stitcher. You can go to rsportsanimal.com and get it. So it is it's really cool. We enjoy doing it. So number five comes out today.
Yeah, I actually caught my wife listening to your show on Friday.
Oh, good.
After listening to the podcast a little bit.
Very nice. I like that. We've got a new listener. I love it.
All right, Jim, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great afternoon, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Yeah, see you out there on Thursday, guys.
All right, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
It's the Ultimate Jim Traber joining us on a Monday. Lots of stuff to pick apart. And listen, there's a whole bunch of stuff on my sheet that we didn't even get to.
Oh, I didn't even get some real quick.
Go.
Happy birthday to my youngest, 5 years old. James is five today. So happy birthday to her.
You know whose birthday's coming up this month?
She's at homesick. Who's that?
Oh, darn it.
Who's that?
Well, you should know, Jared. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered around.